Welcome back to the Live the Legacy podcast, a project by the Andrew Goodman Foundation. This is your co-host, Mo Banks.
And Mia Matthews. Today we are joined by Selene Gomez, the National Outreach Director at Boat Riders. Alrighty, well, welcome back to this episode of the Live the Legacy podcast. Today we are joined by Selene Gomez, the National Outreach Director at Boat Riders. So we'd love if we can start this off, if you could introduce yourself. Who are you and how did you get to your role as the National Outreach Director at Boat Riders?
First off, thank you all for having me. So as you mentioned, I'm Selene Gomez. I am the daughter of Mexican immigrants and I grew up in Los Angeles in California. I went to Texas A&M College Station for my undergrad and got my master's from the University of Texas in San Antonio, which is where I'm actually currently working on my PhD as well. I've been involved in advocacy and nonprofits for 14 years and counting in an effort to reach racial equity. Before being with Boat Riders, I actually worked in a Latinx-focused nonprofit where I was introduced to Boat Riders. We worked with them to talk about voter ID in Texas specifically. At the time, Boat Riders was a small but growing organization, and they were addressing a fairly new yet growing obstacle when it comes to voting rights, which is voter ID. And I noticed that there weren't many organizations that were talking about it at that time. And so, you know, when the opportunity came, I wanted to be a part of it. And so I joined Boat Riders in July of 2018 and have been here since.
We love that. Thank you for giving us a little intro. Beyond what you just described, what else inspired you to work for an organization that helps to ensure that all citizens are able to exercise their freedom to vote?
So I began with advocacy at the Texas State Capitol. And when I was speaking with elected officials, I realized that we had to start from the beginning, right, to make a positive change in our communities. And it started with who you vote in to represent you. And so voting really became the forefront because connecting the dots on all the different issues, how your communities are affected, and then going back to it's because people need to express their voice. They need to be heard. They need to vote so they can have a say as to who is it that is going to represent or not represent them at the end of the day, right? And so for me, it was very important. And in addition to that, seeing that my community was disenfranchised, a lot of people weren't necessarily, you know, given the information. If they didn't speak English well enough, they weren't given the good quality information that you need to know as to you could vote, you could advocate for yourself, and you could make a difference. And that's really what inspired me.
That is so important. And there is truly nothing like the feeling of speaking directly to your lawmakers, your elected officials. So when you're not trying to help people to vote, what do you like to do with your free time?
Well, while I don't have much free time since, as I mentioned, I'm also going to school, the little that I have, I love to spend it with my family and my pets. I feel like it recharges me because the work that we do can be so draining and it feels like you're always on work mode, right? Whether you're reading or hearing the news, it just takes a toll on you. But you also have to be informed to make sure that you're, you know, letting people know what's going on. And so for me, it's just very important to make sure that I have some time for myself, anything that recharges me, because as we know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And we know that this is for the long run.
Absolutely. I always say you can't pour from an empty cup, both in life and work. And I wholeheartedly believe in self-care and rest as an act of resistance. So we all need that time to be just humans. So would love to hear a little bit more about Boat Riders. We know that Boat Riders educates voters and assists citizens to secure their voter ID, that Boat Riders inspires and supports organizations, volunteers, and communities to sustain voter ID education and assistance efforts. Why is this work so important? And what are some common myths you'd like to debunk about voter IDs?
Thank you so much for that. So with Boat Riders, we're a national nonpartisan organization and we were founded in 2012. In case you haven't gotten it by now, we were named after the Freedom Riders, hence our name, Boat Riders. And so while we have been around since 2012, we were really able to get on the ground and have people have one-on-one conversations face-to-face in about 2018. And so it has been a little bit less than that, you know, those 12 years. But, you know, for us, We feel that this work is important because we've seen that it's been increasingly used to intimidate voters, either at the polls or from voting altogether by not even going to the polls due to a lot of voter ID confusion and not being sure if you have what you need or, you know, you may be asked for additional things. For us, we don't just want to inform voters, but we also want to give them the confidence that they have what they need to cast a regular ballot, right? And to have the confidence to advocate for themselves if they get any pushback at the polls, you know, or just have information and be able to, you know, stand for themselves and say, hey, you know, if somebody's trying to give them a provisional ballot when they shouldn't, because then we know that there's extra steps that they have to take. So for us, definitely helping them get an identification and also know what their voter ID law is very important for us. You know, it's funny that you say myths. There are quite a bit of myths out there on voter ID. And this is actually one of the reasons why we actually did a report along with other organizations and universities last year, which I'll talk a little bit more about. But, you know, while some people think that voter ID isn't a big deal, we get that quite a bit, right? Saying, well, everybody has an ID. Who doesn't? Voter ID actually affects millions of Americans. You know, over 34.5 million adult citizens either don't have a driver's license or state ID, or have an updated state ID or driver's license, but it doesn't have their correct address or current name, which may cause difficulties for them in those states that have strict photo ID laws. And so, you know, thinking that this isn't an issue, there aren't that many people. And then you have that raw number and saying, wow, there really are a lot of people that don't have this. Also, voters oftentimes don't realize that the ID requirements are different for those that vote in person and those that are voting by mail. More than half of voting eligible Americans are unsure about their voter ID laws for voting by mail in their state. So there isn't a lot of education around that. Now, we saw that shift a little bit because of COVID, right? There were some states where they were starting to do some mail-in ballots and no excuse mail-in ballots, but not all states did. And that's when there was a little bit more of some hyper awareness on voter ID when it came to mail-in ballots, but there still hasn't been enough. It seems like people have reverted to the default, you know, pre-COVID at that point. Also, one big thing that we get is that people say, why are you doing this? Getting an ID is easy. It may be easy for some people, but to be quite honest, not really. I can even tell you from experience working here, being able to get an appointment to go to the DPS office, you know, and having to wait 3 to 4 months when people don't realize that they have to wait that long. And also in our survey, 19% of respondents or 1 in 5 Americans without driver's license identified that bureaucratic and economic factors were the reason why they didn't have one. And so for us, this is what Vote Writers wants to eliminate, right? Economic factors, if you are not able to pay for, you know, the copy of your birth certificate, for example, or for your actual identification, we can cover that cost. When it comes to bureaucratic factors, it could be intimidating. Some people haven't done the process before, or sometimes you are referred to one person and then you end up in a cycle and you're not able to get your answers. And so we help with that. Not only do we help with the cost, but also through the process of obtaining any underlying documents that are needed. That is definitely a thing that we've seen to kind of debunk that it's not that easy. It's not as accessible as people may think that it is. Also, voter ID is usually talked about when you're making a plan to vote. I think that is part of the myths in a way on saying, hey, it should be on your plan to vote, when in reality, if you don't have an acceptable ID, it doesn't matter that you have a plan to vote because you can't execute it. And so I encourage people to talk about voter ID laws and talk about voter ID when registering voters to make sure that they have enough time to get one if they don't have one, or start just thinking about it from the get-go, because in 38 out of the 50 states that have voter ID laws, it goes hand in hand on having to have that additional documentation. And then lastly, you know, one myth is, you know, a lot of people say that voter ID is popular. A lot of people support it. But oftentimes it's when people don't know all the intricacies and everything that goes along with a voter ID law, right? Once people know a little bit more about this and what it takes, then, you know, we start seeing that people are having additional questions instead of just overall saying, yes, it's supported. You know, many people don't know this, but there is a strong bipartisan support for requiring high schools to provide state IDs for those without a driver's license. There was an overall 81% of support for this initiative in the study that we did along with our partners. And so that is very interesting in the sense that, you know, if there is a voter ID law, then people are also wanting a more streamlined mechanism to provide not just a voting ID, but just an identification period for all the individuals in the US.
Absolutely. Thank you for clearing up quite a bit of those myths and showcasing just how widespread of an issue this is. I feel like voter ID may be almost, like you kind of mentioned, not treated as an afterthought, but included in plans for voting that can't be brought to light because of the barriers in place for having an ID in the first place. So I'd love to see how teams who focus on voter registration treat voter ID more as a right out of the gate, let's focus on this, make sure that everyone has what they need before we then move on to making a plan to vote. So very important conversation here. Thank you for bringing that all to light. So now looking to see if you could share with us how the increasing stringency in voter ID laws across the country motivated you and your team to take action.
Sure thing. So one thing that we did, and I know that we'll talk a little bit more about it, later in the episode, is we took a closer look at the issue of voter ID. Vote Writers, PublicWise, and the Center for Democracy and Civic Engagement at the University of Maryland and the Brennan Center for Justice funded a study last year in 2023 to look at this further. This was very necessary because the closest thing that we had to voter ID and a study for it was from 06, 2006. So we know that that's definitely, you know, even before we had all of these other states having voter ID laws. This study is definitely one of its kind because it also includes, demographics that aren't usually reached out to in studies by including prepaid cell lists. So that was definitely one of the big projects that we've had to date. Also, since the last presidential election, 17 states have either new or stricter voter ID laws, which is impacting in-person and mail voting. So for us, this proves to us that ID is increasingly becoming an obstacle for voters. So we keep up with these changes and do outreach to those states that are most affected. Just to give you an example, Ohio went from having to one of the most flexible voter ID laws to one of, if not the most strict voter ID law in the beginning of January in 2023. So as a result of that, we regrouped and we made sure to deploy resources there. And I'm happy to report that we now have a robust team working with different communities to ensure that voters know and have the acceptable IDs to vote. So I just encourage everybody to make sure that they go to our website, votewriters.org. They're able to stay up to date as to what are the changes in their states.
Yes, please. Again, for our listeners, that's votewriters.org to stay up to date. You know, you mentioned, and we can't skip right over that because I feel like there's a lot to unpack here, but you've mentioned some numbers, you've mentioned some surveys, you mentioned the study that you've been doing. Can you please let our listeners know about your most recent report that you all have been working so hard to put together and how you're using that to help individuals understand and comply with their state's specific requirements around voter ID?
For sure. Yes. This study has, been one of the big projects that we've had that we're very proud of because we're finally able to really disseminate a lot more information when it comes to voter ID. As previously mentioned, over 34.5 million, or you can also translate it into percentage, 14.8% of adult citizens in the United States do not have an unexpired driver's license or state ID with their current name or address on it. That's 14.8%. just to let that sink in a little. That's quite a bit of, voting age citizens that do not have an identification. And so VoteWriters helps voters track down the key documents and secure the ID that they need to cast a ballot that counts. So we cover the cost of vital documents, we arrange transportation to the ID issuing offices, and we provide pro bono legal assistance when necessary. We also address voter confusion. In this study, not only did we talk about who has an ID, who doesn't have an ID, why don't you have an ID, but also do you know your voter ID laws? Do you know that if you need one? And the study actually found that 55% of people living in states with photo ID requirements indicated that they don't think or don't know if a photo ID is required. So you're talking about over half of voters that live in a voter ID state, 38 out of 50 states, right, aren't sure or don't think that they need an ID when they in fact need one. Now, furthermore, 35% of Americans living in states that do not require photo ID to vote in person think or are not sure if a photo ID is required. So out of those, the handful of states that don't actually have a voter ID law, there's still over a third of their voting citizens that aren't sure if they need it or not. And so that within itself also needs education because they need to know that they don't need it, right? That they are able to go and cast their ballot without one. And so for us, we have various resources to educate voters in their state. Voter ID laws, such as our state pages, which are on our website, again, at votewriters.org. We also have our voter ID information cards, which we ship and print completely free of charge for any 501c3s or nonpartisan organizations. We do voter ID trainings, whether they're on a national level or if you're really interested in breaking down the voter ID law of your state. And we also have our helpline number where people can either call or text us, either in English or in Spanish. Our helpline is 866-ID, the number 2, vote, where we can answer any questions a voter has on voter ID.
Thank you for sharing those resources. We'll be sure to put some of those in the show notes for listeners to be able to easily click in to access those. They seem like very well done and useful tools to help get out the vote. So as you know, I'm sure, college students often face unique challenges when voting, especially with ID requirements. Can you discuss these specific challenges and how VoteWriters is addressing them to ensure that young voters are heard in our electoral process?
Sure thing. Students are definitely a population that is extremely affected when it comes to voter ID. And student IDs are one of the most confusing in voter ID laws, right? In some states, student IDs are not accepted at all. In other states, they're all accepted. And then there's other states that only accept student IDs from some institutions. And if that isn't confusing enough, some student IDs are accepted when voting in person, but they not may be accepted if you're planning on voting by mail in that same state. So not only, when it comes to students, not only do you need to know how you plan to vote in person or by mail, but then you also need to know your voter ID law. And you may have to do some additional research because if you are in one of those states where it's a maybe, you have to dig a little bit deeper. And so, you have to do all of this, background work to be able to do that. And we already know because of our study that 18 to 24 year olds are the least likely to have a driver's license with their current name or address on it. They are a very mobile population as well. And so not only do you need to know the items that I previously discussed, but then you also have to see, does it have to match the address? Does it have to match your name to the T for you to be able to use that identification? So because of this, we also have a resource page. If you go to votewriters.org, we do have a page specifically for voter ID, and it tells you whether the student IDs are accepted or not and all the intricacies that come along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, you were mentioning like some colleges can accept it, others can't. I know, the Andrew Goodman Foundation has been working in Fulton County, specifically, working with HBCUs who are impacted by this because they're private, you know, sometimes often the private institutions and their voter IDs are not, or their student IDs do not count as voter IDs, whereas the colleges that are not HBCUs, those do count as it, and so as voter IDs. So we, you know, we've been working with this, we've been trying to understand it on our end of things, and we can also link to some of those reports in our show notes if listeners want to follow along with those stories and see the work that we've been doing there. You know, we've been like talking about this, and it seems like it, you know, kind of overwhelming. Like I'm sitting here being like, I'm glad that I have my ID, because like, and it wasn't easy to get that, by the way. I will like just pause in the middle of this interview and talk about how I had a name change. One, I got married, so my last name had to change. But two, I identify as a trans non-binary person, and I was changing my first name as well. And so that was like a big, you know, two at the same time. I understand that that can be kind of like a confusing process. But I went to go get my new driver's license once I had legally changed my name. And they're like, you can't get a new driver's license until you have a new birth certificate. So I was like, okay, cool. So then I go and I apply to get a new birth certificate. They're like, well, you can't get a new birth certificate until you get a new social security or card that has your new name. I said, okay, cool. So then I go and I try to get that. And they go, well, you can't get that until you have your birth certificate. And I was like, they just told me that I had to come here to do this. And they were, and it was a circle. And it was so frustrating. And it took me months and months and months. And this is as somebody who speaks English as my first language. I didn't have to like navigate anything around that. I was someone who had a remote job, who had a lot of flexibility and could take time off to go do that. Well, yes, I have young kids. They were in school and I had the care and flexibility provided there. So I could navigate that and I could go on that really frustrating journey. And it, again, it took months to get that. And it finally, I had like to call thousands of people, it felt like, at the end of it. But eventually found my way to be able to get the ID. But again, I'm like sitting here thinking, I'm glad I have that. But there maybe are some listeners who don't have their ID, but are eager to participate in upcoming elections, especially this year. It's, you know, 2024. There's obviously a big looming election that everyone's thinking about. But beyond that, they might want to be participating in some of their local elections. What are some first steps that they should take to ensure that they're prepared? And additionally, how can they stay informed about changes in voter ID laws in their states that contribute to the broader effort of safeguarding voting rights?
Well, first off, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think that it captures a lot of the frustrations that we face, even our staff, and trying to help people where there's a circle. You don't need one, you need one thing to get the other, but then the other to get the other. And so sometimes it's frustrating and a lot of people end up giving up. So that's definitely, thank you again, Mo, for sharing that. Now, you know, the first thing that people can do is make sure to do an ID check. You can go to our website at voteriders.org. You click on your state page and you see what IDs are accepted in your state. And you can also call or text us at 866-ID-TO-VOTE to make sure that you have an acceptable ID. That is the first thing that I would suggest. And again, you can go to our website or call our number. All of our resources are fully bilingual in English and in Spanish, so you can go ahead and take advantage of that. The second thing is, once you've insured yourself, is make sure that your friends, family, and community have an acceptable ID to vote. Start talking about it, right? Instead of, you know, just, again, if you're talking about, first off, if you're talking about voter registration, make sure that you're coupling along with that, because as mentioned before, it could very well take a couple of days, but it could take a couple of weeks, a couple of months. You just never know, depending on what it is that you need and what complication may come up. So to educate your community, you can order our voter ID information cards and give those out to your community. The third thing that you can do is make sure that voter ID is part of your conversation. This is not just for individuals, but also for partners. If you are focusing on voter registration, start talking about voter ID. Again, you can order our cards and you can give that as a complimentary piece of literature, for example. It's really important to start thinking about it. Again, 38 out of 50 states have a voter ID law. So that means the majority. So we have to start talking about that to make sure that we're setting up voters for success, especially if we're working so hard to register them, especially if they're first time voters and they may have not gone through the process before. And talking about voter ID, because You know, in some states that don't have a voter ID law, they may still be asked for an identification the first time that they vote due to the federal Helping Americans Vote Act. And so we really need to make sure that we're having those conversations. I also encourage everybody to stay up to date. You can bookmark your state page on our website because we update our pages in real time. You can also sign up to our listserv at votewriters.org/subscribe, and you can get updates as they come from the different states and, you know, different movement that we're seeing.
Awesome. Thank you for helping listeners know how they can follow along and learn more about Vote Writers. We'll be sure to have all those resources in the show notes. As you know, this is the Live a Legacy podcast, and in all of our episodes, we like to remember the why behind it. Part of our mission is continuing to live the legacy of Andrew Goodman, James L. Cheney, and Michael Schwerner, three men who the Ku Klux Klan murdered for trying to register Black people to vote in Mississippi in 1964. Rooted in their legacy, we aim to continue making young voices and votes a powerful force in our democracy. When you hear the story of Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner, how are you inspired to continue your work as your work to help young people be civically engaged?
So 60 years later, and here we are. Still trying to continue what they started, right? You know, for me, it's just an opportunity for reflection, right? To kind of apply this specifically to voter ID, we know that 47% of Black Americans that are between the ages of 18 and 29 don't have a driver's license with their current name or address, and 30% of them don't have a license at all. So not only do we already know that out of, you know, the 100% possibility, only 70 have an ID, but out of that 70%, almost half don't have a current one. And so we're still seeing the disparities, right? I am happy that they provided a foundation, right, with the work that they started. And those of us who have come after are able to build on it. Right. They started with voter registration and we're building on it through voter rights, including voter ID. And we're still seeing that we're still trying to get equity for BIPOC individuals. Right. Which is unfortunate, but it's a fight that had to get started, and we're continuing it. And we see it that it's going to continue. For me, I'm still aspiring to include racial equity in everything that I do, from access to the polls to having people that are directly affected lead these movements with the support of allies. And youth have historically made change happen. And I definitely see that happening again in our history. And I think that part of it is, you know, because of those that have come before us, the ones that are in the fight and those that are going to be coming, you know, in the future as well.
Outstanding answer. Thank you. I love that 60 years and we're still here. I don't love that we're still here 60 years later, but I am glad to know that we have so many folks on the ground continuing the fight. And I know, speaking for myself, I will stay in this fight for as long as I'm sure I'm alive, given it's gone. So as we enter into a monumental election cycle year, what's something that is giving you hope in 2024? On a different note, let's lighten it up a little bit. This can be related to voting in the election cycle, of course, but it also could be a good book you've read lately, a song or album giving you life, a great chat with a friend, anything you'd like. I would love to hear what's giving you hope and joy these days.
I think that something that has helped a lot is reframing this election, right? Framing it as this is a time where we give it, you know, our all, and we commit to do whatever we can, regardless of the election outcome, and just saying, hey, I did everything that I could, right? I think that also thinking of, it's not a, are there certain elections that had the outcome or bust, right? I know that we consider, a lot of the times we consider a win, quote unquote, on just election results. But I think that that is also something that we need to be cognizant of and change our mindset to what changes did I make, right? What change did we make in our community? Did we increase, you know, involvement of people? Did we have local wins? You know, things like that. And really digging deeper and looking at the more long-term impact that we have with voters and with our communities to build from that and keep going. Because just looking at, oh, you know, 2024 and that's it, there's so many years that come after that where there's so many possibilities. So I think that for me, the hope is my reflection and way that I'm looking at this, regardless of what happens, knowing that I did everything that I could. And then what are those true changes that I've made that provide equity incrementally that don't necessarily reflect or aren't reflected on some of the outcomes in 2024?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, first of all, for this interview. It's just been incredible. It's been jam-packed. I think it's going to be one that I personally will listen back to a couple of times just because there's so much. And I hope our audience has enjoyed it just as much as Mia and I have been enjoying sitting here and speaking with you. We've definitely mentioned voteriders.org as a place where our audience can go and check out more of your work. But because our audience is primarily young people, are there other places that they can follow along with VoteRiders?
Yeah, for sure. And again, I have enjoyed this conversation very much as well. Thank you so much for wanting to talk about voter ID. It's definitely something that has been growing and that we've seen has created a lot of confusion. And know that we're here to help. Anything that you need. If you know anyone who needs help in getting an ID, or you want to add our resources into your programming or talk to people, feel free to reach out to us. You can definitely follow us on the social media platforms with at VoteRiders. You can also sign up for our email updates. Again, that's at voteriders.org/subscribe. You can also learn about our resources through our partner toolkit that we have on our website. You can also email us at info@voteriders.org. And again, you can call, or as most people like to do, text our helpline at 866-ID-TO-VOTE. And if you have any questions, or if you know of a community that could benefit from, you know, the resources that we provide, I would love to be connected with them. If you have questions on, do you have a voter ID that is accepted in your state? Does your student ID count as an acceptable ID? Please reach out or make sure that you visit us.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
This concludes this week's episode of the Live the Legacy podcast. Thanks so much for listening. A special thank you to VoteRiders for being on today's episode.
Another special thank you to Beak Music for all of the music that you heard on today's episode. And if you liked this episode, please like, comment, or subscribe. It makes it that much easier for other people to find our podcast.
Until next time, this has been your co-host, Mia Matthews.
And Mo Banks.
Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.